I think we have to be really curious about ways that the technology can exist with us that isn't about augmenting our human selves. It's not about augmenting and being lazy. It's about actually stepping into it in a way and really saying, here's how it can play in my world.
Hello, my friends, and welcome to 20 Minutes with Bronwyn. In case you're new here, I'm an authentic communication coach, and I help visionary leaders become spellbinding communicators. My intention for this podcast is to create a space in your schedule for ideas, insights, tools, and strategies designed to help you realize your full potential as a leader, sometimes by offering conversations with brilliant people, and sometimes by offering my own advice. But my hope is that you leave each episode inspired, empowered, and more connected to yourself, your work, and your life. So let's get cracking, shall we? Oh my goodness, you guys. I am so excited for you to meet my guest this week. This is an interview I have been trying to get on the books for what seems like years, but really is probably only a couple of weeks. But the minute I heard about this person, I knew I had to have her on my show. My people, please meet Rima Bosher-Nitzan. Rima is a futurist, a facilitator, strategist, and the CEO of Dialogue, an interdisciplinary strategic advisory and think tank that helps leaders and companies find the shortest, clearest path to their most ambitious goals. Rima has served as a strategic advisor and thought partner to CEOs of emerging businesses and Fortune 500 organizations, Google, Apple, Levi's, Kaiser, Permanente, focusing on catalyzing cross-sector human-connected transformation and intelligent innovation. Her writing has appeared in Fast Company, TechCrunch, Inc., and Forbes, and she's also an advisor to Stanford's Women in Design program. Rima was formerly on the board of the Headlands Center for the Arts and SECA Council Board of SF MoMA. Find her at Rima Bosch. Is that Instagram or Twitter?
Albert? It's both.
It's both. And then at Dialogue, just like it sounds, _CO. Rima, welcome.
Hello. Nice to see you.
So happy to see you. And where I want to begin this conversation, the title of this is AI Won't Give You the Chills. So everybody knows we're going to get there. But before we get there, I want to ask you about something in your background that really piqued my interest, which is you began on this sort of consulting side of the house at Deloitte, and you focused on M&A and large-scale transformation, all that kind of stuff. But then you took a break to advise contemporary art collectors. Can you explain what stepping out of the consulting hamster wheel to dip into the art world, how does that inform and how did that change the way you think about innovation and transformation? I want to start there.
I got burnt out. I was doing a lot of work at Deloitte. We were traveling a lot, living internationally. It was awesome. And it was really hard. And a week before Lehman collapsed in 2008, I was like, I'm going to do this. I didn't know that it was going to happen. And I was just, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to go out on my own and take some time off and actually start something different. And I always wanted to be in the arts. I majored in economics and art history. And then I got into the corporate sphere and I realized what it would take to do that and what the sacrifices would be. And I wasn't willing to do it anymore. Mm-hmm. And I kind of decided that I'm like, okay, now it's time to pivot, but without knowing much. So studying art history and doing and working in the contemporary art world are two different things. So I moved to New York. I started a program at Sotheby's Institute in Contemporary Art. And then I decided to be an advisor because I'm like, if client service is what I know, how do I do client service in the art world? Because the gallery world was very specific. You had to be in a place all the time that looked the same. Yep. And being in consulting, that was my favorite part, is we never had to be in a place that looked the same for more than a month or so. And then being in a curator in a museum was this, then you're like succumbing to this hierarchical corporation, basically, but just looks pretty. And so there was really not a lot of space to do anything really that new unless you wanted to completely reinvent the product that was offered to the arts. And so I started working with former clients actually on the M&A side who had successful exits and wanted to connect and work together. The artists we were working with, they were really commenting on what was happening in society in a way that I felt was so future focused and so insightful that I wondered, how are these conversations not in the boardroom? How are they not with decision makers who are actually making the things that are affecting people that then, you know, this like trickle down kind of moment. And how are we not changing if we know that climate change is happening, or there's a huge sustainability issue with the fashion world, or obviously inequality and inequity in different ways? I mean, there's so many different themes that come out 30 years earlier through the arts or creative practices that are then getting implemented in the business world, basically after the fact. And being in these spaces, I realize, I mean, this is what the business world is lacking. Innovation is very linear unless you infuse it with this kind of thinking, and then it becomes real innovation. Yeah. So I'm like, how do I bring all of this together? And then in 2015, we started prototyping what is now Dialogue, and how we run our sessions, how we create inquiry, how we think about bringing and converging important topics and how they come together, and how we link that to strategic outcomes, right? And operational outcomes for our clients.
That's great. And actually, it makes me want to shift gears. I want to talk about AI for a second. I was just enchanted by, was it a panel or a speech at South by Southwest that was AI will not give you the chills?
It was a roundtable that I hosted and participated in.
Where I wanted to start with this, I want to just tell you a quick story to kind of ground us in this conversation, because I am very compelled by artificial intelligence, mm-hmm. especially generative AI. I'm fascinated, scared, all the things. And I know in my gut that you're right, that AI won't give us the chills. But let me tell you a quick story. I was sitting with my son a couple weekends ago, and we were talking, we're both huge Lord of the Rings nerds, huge. Mm. And we were talking about the economics of Middle Earth. He and I were kind of spitballing back and forth, like, how would you describe the economics of Middle Earth? And we were talking about bartering. We were talking about, was there monetary exchange? We were trying to remember. And I said, oh, Luca, this is like the perfect time to see what ChatGPT has to say about this. So we went on ChatGPT, and in less than 5 seconds, it gave us complete accurate, because we are nerds. We can know if it's inaccurate. It's very accurate, very complete, perfect categorization of the different economic levers of Middle Earth. And I looked at Luke and I was like, oh my gosh, let's have some fun with this. And so I typed in ChatGPT. I was like, thank you. Now give it to me as a hip hop song. Turned all of that information into rhyming structure, but also make it hip hop culture slang. And I am over here like laughing. I thought this was so fun. And my son looks at me and he's like, this is depressing. He's like, what am I going to do and contribute in a world where this gets cranked out in 5 seconds? So that's how I want to frame this. You're making the case for the value of human intuition, mm-hmm. even in the face of this insane, powerful technology. So take it from there.
Yeah. I think about this in different ways. I think about it as, how do you lead with AI, right? As an organizational leader, what does it mean for your employees to be using it? And how do you integrate it into your day-to-day? I also think about it as a creative, like how do people use it for creativity? And I also think that there's the negative sides of AI, which is, you're talking about Gen AI, so it's a little bit different. But if you think about what's possible with deepfakes and different kind of other things, there's a whole other conversation to be had around intuition and the development of intuition and education and all of that. But specifically to this question, I think that the idea of teaming with, right? I was talking to clients of mine, and in this talk too, we talk about what does it mean to team? This is not my term, Amy Edmondson's term, teaming. Mm. But if you think about it in the context of bringing a group of people together, potentially a team or others, what are the dynamics of using AI, right? There's the sort of the use of it, right? As someone is going to be typing and asking it questions and helping it enhance strategic conversations, for example. Mm. And then there's the sort of in audience own, right? Can it pick up what's happening in the room? And then can it generate something that's valuable for the conversation? And then if you think about if people are using it as they're in a meeting, what are the dynamics of that in terms of connecting the dots and also the social hierarchy that exists in an organization? Is it the VP that's using the AI because they have the most amount of information? Is it the analyst? Is it the manager? And are those people even in the same meeting? And what does it mean to be in the same meeting using AI? There's all these philosophical conversations that I'm just super curious about. It's only going to evolve as we continue to evolve its use. And I think the intuition kind of plays into it can only go, at least for now, right? There's a two-way thing, like, right, you're communicating to it. It's popping out information at you.
Yeah.
It's only as good as the prompt that you give it. So in a way, you still have to use your intuition currently to be able to inform and do prompts in a way that's going to generate the most valuable outcomes. The AI cannot read a room right now it probably very soon will be able to read a room if it's not already being worked on. Mm. But currently, you still have to use your intuition to understand team dynamics, interpersonal relationships, how to navigate that in a moment of important navigation or strategic dialogue. Yeah. So at some point, that's also going to be shifting. But I think those are sort of the two places where I'm thinking about, like, how does it integrate? But I also think about, can it be just like our Google Homes, right? Like, it's sort of part of our everyday and we're using it. And I imagine a Google Home at some point will be even more deeper AI or more Gen AI than it is right now. And I'd wonder, what are some of the ways that we could see it integrate into, like, the fabric of our communities? Like, how does it integrate into, like, a larger scope of what we're actually doing as humans on this earth, right? We're not necessarily just in meetings all day. We are also being.
And so, give me an example of that. Like, what does that mean? What could that mean?
I've been reading so many books over the past probably 3 months around this. I mean, there's a whole theory of ecology of technology, right? Around, like, where can AI be part of a community? Can it be a designated role in a way of being, right? Mm-hmm. So AI in general, it could be not a person necessarily, but a thing that you consult when, or a thing that consults you, or mm-hmm. becomes the fabric of bringing community together, or has a very designated role. And just like, for example, a community leader will have a role, or back in the day, or even in the current day, like, shamans have a role in community, right? An indigenous community. If a shaman is meant to be, like, the depth of wisdom and sort of bringing and integrating all of the sort of lineages, let's say, together in one place, what could a technology be as if part of that kind of thinking?
Oh my God, that's blowing my mind right there.
There's, like, a lot of different, this is not even my own thinking, right? This is, like, mm-hmm. me bringing together a lot of different things that I've been reading. But mm-hmm. I think those are just some of the things that we need to be thinking about. And one of the things we discussed in this talk is data-driven decision-making. And, like, to what end do you rely on data versus using your intuition? In some ways, you can think about it as a leader, as you have to establish a ton of credibility to be able to come into a boardroom and say, my gut says this is wrong. Mm. Screw the data. We have mm-hmm. like years and years. Maybe we don't have years and years. Maybe we have a month of data. But I believe, based on my knowing, because we are sense making, we are constantly making sense of the world right through our bodies, that this is wrong. And yeah. I feel like right now, if you go to do that, not only do you need to have a track record and credibility, you have to have data on your intuition to be able to use your intuition in this yeah. kind of way. But I'm hopeful that maybe with AI, we can actually bring certain pieces to the table without it having to be data that was specifically driven for this particular focus area for the company or something. Like, we can bring yeah. things out that are going to enhance the value of our intuition when we are saying, my knowing says that this is the right thing.
It's so interesting. I've never heard the idea of giving respectful thought to the role that AI plays in a community. Like, that shaman example is so interesting, not because I think AI should be our shaman. That is not what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. But I think that the mental construct we've all been thinking about with AI is new technology equals threatening. And that's just how we've always thought about new technology. And for good reason. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Jay Oppenheimer brought some new technology online. It was mm-hmm. threatening. Mm-hmm. There is a reason humans are threatened by technology initially. I'm sure when cars came online that everybody was worried about horses. I get it.
Totally.
But what you're saying is there's an opportunity. We don't have to lose that part of ourselves, but there might be an opportunity to say, how about we stop thinking in the binary around good, bad, threat, not, and think about it in terms of the roles, you're talking about archetypal roles for technology to play versus threat, no threat, green light, red light. You're saying if we were to assign AI an archetypal role in society, what might we choose? And I think that is a really interesting question. I don't think I've ever heard that posed.
That's exactly it, because it's not about whether it's going to happen. It's already happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the fact that there's very little governance around it is a huge issue. But I think that it's up to us to define the way that it shows up in our world. Mm-hmm. And I think it's an individual thing. You can choose, right, to be part of a community that does XYZ, or you cannot. We still have agency.
Yes.
And I think that's the problem. I think sometimes we, at least in the US society, I feel like we believe that things happen to us that we don't necessarily have the agency to choose, even though
it's a lot easier that way, Rima. We don't have to take responsibility.
Totally, totally. But there's a bigger way of thinking about it that I don't think we're thinking about. And I think asking ourselves, are we thinking big enough, is a huge question that needs to be kept alive in every conversation.
But even taking that a step further, the question that I find juicy is, are we thinking big enough? And what are the prompts to get us to think bigger?
Yes.
So your prompt around like what role archetypally could generative AI or just AI play in society? Very interesting. Mm-hmm. Like, are there other prompts or ways? You know, I love a good question because it's like it elbows its way into different spaces. What are other questions we can be asking that could elevate our thinking around artificial intelligence?
Yeah, I mean, this is a great question. I'm working through some of that right now.
That's what's so alive about this question is that nobody has these answers. None of us know.
Right. Exactly. I mean, we don't know, but I think we can be curious and ask that, like, just what's coming up for us.
Yes.
I mean, one of the things that I'm curious about is, I mean, and this is kind of just going off of the fact that we make patterns as humans, right? We are pattern making people, right?
Yes, we are.
We can read patterns because that's how we're wired. There's also something to be said around machines and how machine learning is mapped, right? To how pattern recognition and how and why AI has been able to be so successful is because of this ability to read patterns very fast.
Hmm.
And so I wonder if part of our goal as a species really should be, because we are approaching, I feel, a somewhat of an end of one civilization and an entry into another.
For sure.
Is to be able to hone our pattern making abilities, our pattern recognition abilities as people. Mm. We are also computers. The way that we work is very similar.
Yeah.
And so without completely saying that we're, I mean, I'm not saying we're machines, right? We are living and being. And the difference between us and machines is that we can make sense. We can sense make and we can like feel and intuit, and knowing comes to us whether we know it or not. Our bodies have a lot of knowledge and a lot of answers for us for all the questions that we have. But that said, I still think that in the current climate, what we are not doing well is we're relying too much on technology to augment or to sort of propel human connection by even though it's hindering human connection. And we're relaxing into it too much.
I think part of
the need that I'm seeing is we need to hone our sense-making abilities to become the creatures that we were meant to be, which is to be completely attuned to nature, to be understanding what's going on around us at all times, to be focused and not completely like diffused, and to be able to relate. Like our big claim to fame, right, is that we have a relational ability. We have relational intelligence. We can sense and connect and receive and respond. The thing is, the technology is going to do similar things.
Yeah.
And there is an opportunity for us to be tricked, right? Whether the technology is trying to do it or not, there is a sort of smoke and mirror situation, right? Where you look one way, your body recognizes something that's happening as one input, because that's how we recognize patterns. And then we believe our reality is one thing versus another.
Yeah.
That is dangerous, right? That is where we have to be, okay, what do we need to hone in our current selves to be able to keep up with this new operating model that we're stepping into?
Well, there's something that you're making me think about right now. Something that's really worrying me right now, Rima. So when I think about my human self, I am pulling in things into my reality all the time. And I have choices around that. And I notice that when I pull into my consciousness content that is, let's say, really pessimistic and dark in terms of its prediction. Like I started watching a couple months ago, I tried watching that show called Years and Years. Very dystopian, dark, cynical. Then I watched that movie, Leave the World Behind, with Julia Roberts and Mahershala Ali. And it's, again, super cynical, very dark. And when I am pulling that kind of information into myself, my perceptions become cynical. They become dark. Yeah. And it's not in a generative way. It's in a way of like, I'm nobody's fool. I know how this movie goes. I know what's going to happen next. And it's a whole film that then covers my eyes and I see the world through this lens of cynicism. I read this book called The Unthinkable is the name of the book. Mm-hmm. And what the author discovered, she went and studied all of the outcomes of natural disasters and disaster sites. Mm. And she wanted to see who survives and why, and what mm-hmm. happens when the worst happens. And despite what all of the content that we consume would tell us, when the shit hits the fan, what humans do is they cooperate. They don't turn on each other. Mm-hmm. And I feel that to be responsible users of AI, to be responsible citizens and whatever this new reality we're walking into is, if we feed ourselves a steady diet of cynicism, we are actually grooming ourselves to behave in the worst possible way, which actually, it turns out, isn't even our normal default. Our mm-hmm. default is to help each other. That's what I'm thinking about, is I'm thinking about not just honing and developing our intuition, but honing and developing our intuition in a way that is generative and loving and compassionate. Speak to how you think about honing intuition.
Oh, so much is in there that starts with us, like ourselves and our relationship to ourselves. You know, I think there's a huge part of it that is tied to self-worth. Do I deserve to do X, Y, Z? And then tied to love, tied to compassion and self-compassion. And I think this part is where, unfortunately, I think this next generation is probably going to be in a better place, because the millennial and Gen X generation has been doing their work, has tried, well, not everyone, of course, but like, I think that we are all trying to improve ourselves, because we understand that the way that we were raised is not actually going to get us anywhere in terms of emotional intelligence. And I'm hopeful that equips the next generation, even though they're going to be a completely online digital generation, or they already are. The installation of that kind of, at least, relationship to self, or the importance of relationship to self, is going to get them further. Part of intuition is being able to feel and allowing yourself to feel. And I think that the only thing that I see hindering our ability to feel is how much we are relying on social media and the dopamine hits from our technology to fuel our suppression of emotion.
To like guide our emotion. Like, I may be feeling lonely, and then I go on social media or I consume content that then makes me feel angry instead, or that makes me feel like a cute cat video, which maybe there are moments where you just need a good cat video, but it's almost like emotional diversion. Sure, we're avoiding those feelings, but we're getting that fake feeling of feeling on the wrong feeling.
Absolutely. And I think that being able to sense into yourself and understand, what is my feeling about this? How do I relate to the thing that's happening around me? Do I feel good? Do I feel awkward? Should I stop whatever I'm doing because it doesn't feel good to do this anymore? I don't know that a lot of people have that, because so many of us are powered by external perception or powered by expectations of external validation. And then we forget, what does it mean to be me? And I think that's what I'm talking about in terms of connecting to yourself, connecting to like really owning your self-worth, however you relate to it, right? Everyone's different. And constantly bringing things back of like, how do I feel in this moment? And even the simplest stuff, right? Your mom can tell you she loves you. How does that make me feel? I can tell you, for me, it'll make me feel slightly awkward because she'll never say that to me. But why can I not receive from her? Why can I not receive from her? What does it mean, right? So I think it's just about questioning, not even questioning, but really just connecting to the, like, being present in the moment of like, what are you experiencing and how do you bring that back to self? And knowing that isn't a selfish act. It's actually a way of relating and honing your relatability and relational intelligence. And then I think, I mean, all the things you said, right? Compassion, intuition. I feel like we just have to be constantly in this growth mindset, right? Doesn't mean that you have to be in therapy. Doesn't mean that you constantly have to be bettering yourself. But I think that the understanding of our role as humans and our function as humans in the context of what's happening to us, not in reverse of that, is the thing that's going to hone us. And of course, I mean, educating around, I feel like staying up to date on what's happening from a technological standpoint, the developments, the things that are happening, that's really important, just because then you can understand how those inputs may change how you receive or give information. And that's naturally just going to be just inputs for how you are in the world.
So, Rima, what are your favorite intuition practices then, practically speaking for you? Or what have you heard from your clients are the intuition honing practices that make a difference for them as leaders? Because leaders are under, like, we have the same kind of clients, and the leaders I work with are under insane pressure to hit insane numbers. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter how great the number was last quarter, we got a new one to hit. What are the practices that make a difference for you? And what have you heard makes a difference for your client base?
Well, their relationship to success is a big one. We do a couple of different things. We have like our think tank work and our sort of ways of strategically working through things to get strategic outcomes. And then there's the leadership work, because I realized that we cannot actually get the outputs we need from our clients or the outcomes if they're not strong leaders, if they're not making decisions in a way that aligns with who they are. So we developed this program called Finding Beauty in Ambiguity, which is a public program that we offer both in corporations and outside of like corporations where individual leaders can sign up. Mm-hmm. But one of the things we do in that program is explore our relationships to self. And one of the kind of things that I feel like has been transformative for our clients is understanding their best self. When do I operate from my best self? When do I not? How do I access my best self in times of really quick, tumultuous change or transformation or uncertainty or ambiguity? And how do I operate from that place so that I can be a better leader, make better decisions, my team can be more reliant on me and trustworthy and whatever? And I think that piece, because what you can do once you understand your best self, and you have to go into the subconscious. So we do quite a bit of work that is before we get into the fun, strategic kind of like creative thinking, we go inwards and we say, okay, we're going to facilitate you through a process that's very much about mind body. And how do you connect to self in that moment? Can you go back to that self when you're in a critical moment? And then can you ask your best self questions in the moments where you don't think you know what to do, but your best self definitely knows what to do because you have years of experience, you know what you're doing. But in moments when we don't know what's next, we doubt, we fall into doubt. And we forget that possibility is possible. We forget to be optimistic. We forget that hope can be a strategy. And it's really just about how you relate and how you create ways for bringing everything together in alignment. But before you get there, you need to know that you're in a place where you can be your best self. Mm-hmm. So we work on that. That really works wonders for people, actually, because when you go into the subconscious, all sorts of stuff emerges. Mm-hmm. You don't have to share with others in the room. It's more just your experience with yourself. Then we also really work on exploring polarities as part of intuition building, because so much of our world is about holding many truths. And I've noticed that we are very, especially people who are more linear and operational, super uncomfortable with if it's not black or white, that they are like going ballistic. Yep. And not only that, but they don't realize the value of circular thinking sometimes, of just going around and like really thinking really deeply and intentionally about certain things. They just want to get to the next thing. Fine, speed, efficiency, productivity. I get that. I get the desire. I get the value. But the goal isn't necessarily to get there faster. The goal is to sometimes the process is the experience. When we explore polarities, we're really looking at different things that they're holding true. Where are the tensions? Why are there tensions? Once we kind of get everything out on paper, are those tensions productive? Do they serve a purpose? Because sometimes amazing things come out of the tension, right? Wisdom comes out of it. Definitely, like they can navigate with intuition and say, oh, actually, the convergence of these two tensions is forming a third tension. It's not actually a tension. That is actually a strategy. Let's go take that forward.
For example, Rima, I'm just thinking about inside myself.
Yeah.
My polarity that I am constantly bumping up against is I believe in creativity and I love being creative and I love nurturing my creativity. But, and also I am ambitious. I am trying to, you know, grow revenue year over year.
Yes.
And these two things are at odds with each other constantly because creativity takes time, doesn't like pressure, doesn't want deadlines. And the ambitious part of me is like, we don't have time.
We share the same tension, you and I, for sure.
I figured we might.
So like, what are the positives of being creative?
To your originality, point? Joy.
And then what are the positives of being strategic? We're not even strategic, but being ambitious, analytical, right?
Achievement, progress.
And so for even in this moment, right, you can say, okay, achievement, progress as defined by whom? So it's an external thing versus creativity is potentially an internal thing. I'm totally jumping to conclusions.
I love just, it.
Right. And so you can begin to do is explore what is valuable to you, right? If you value external input over other things, there's no judgment here. There's no one say that you shouldn't. You can, but then know that your business is going to be driven by that. In creativity, if you value creativity, then the slow development, or even just, it doesn't have to be, creativity can be fast depending on how you relate to it. What does that mean for you to be creative, and how much value does it add to the ambition, right? And so you can begin to think about these things because they're not mutually exclusive. They live within you and there's a battle. I hear you because I know the battle, but what does it mean to bring them together? What's the net new that you can create out of the tension if it was an ideal world of yours? Maybe you sacrifice a few zeros on the bottom line, or maybe actually creativity gives you a few zeros on the bottom line. Everyone has very different things. And so we explore a lot of that together.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this then, because I think this is real for all of us, is I love thinking about these things. I love writing about them. I love considering them. And then the week begins and Monday punches me in the face. And then Wednesday does a roundhouse kick to my head. You know what I mean? Like, how do you systematize, integrate, create forcing functions in people's lives to create an aperture big enough for this stuff to be visible?
This is the jam. Like, I feel like this is the work. If you are committed to doing your best work and committed to being your best self, let's say, I think that the sexy work and the inner work has to come together. I don't think that we can get away with it. And for different people, it looks different. Some people love the polarity stuff and makes them really excited. Yeah. But then some people have a lot of resistance to it before they start loving it, or they never love it, but they know that they have to get through it. I think it's really about your relationship to what you want, period. And I think, as our friend Bonnie says, you know, what do you want? And I think it's a super difficult question. It's super hard for me to answer. I mean, I could tell you all the things and then I come back to like, there's a big void of like, wait, I haven't actually named the elephant in the room. What is it that I want about this thing? That's, and that thing is often personal. It has nothing to do with work.
It's so true.
I think that's the $1 million question, is like, how do you want to be? What do you want to do? And what does it look like?
Yeah,
for you to be doing these things.
And I think just to like circle back, because I want to be respectful of your time. I think to circle back to all this, what I'm hearing in your voice and in your words is that AI, whether it's generative AI or otherwise, is this incredibly potent technology. And it's one of many. There are all the technologies. But in order for us to be capable, powerful stewards of that technology that maintain our agency, that maintain some degree of control, is the wrong word, but you know where I'm going with that. Mastery, I don't know. In order to be good stewards of it, let's say, we have got to think critically about how we hone our intuition, how we lean into our humanity. Is that right? Is that at the base of this argument? Is that what
Absolutely.
You're saying?
And I think we have to be really curious about ways that the technology can exist with us that isn't about augmenting our human selves. It's not about augmenting and being lazy. It's about actually stepping into it in a way and really saying, here's how it can play in my world. And looking at your world in a way that is not just between your computer and yourself, but really looking at what are the things that matter to me. And what does it mean for it to be a part of my life, right? As almost like a family member or something like that. And then explore the feeling of that. What does it mean for that to be the thing that you do with it? Because I think there's so much going on beyond us that isn't visible to us. If we can bring visibility to the thing that is, that we can have some control over, even to keep us safe, even to keep us safe from other technologies that might be invading our privacy or invading our safe spaces, then maybe that's its role, right? As the protector. I don't know what it is, but what I'm saying is think big. This is an opportunity for us to not be converging our thinking, but expanding our thinking. We haven't reached the converging yet. We have to expand really broadly and not be fearful, because we're just exploring. It's really just an exploration right now. Even though there's repercussions, education, exploration, curiosity is the thing I think I would like really encourage people to be. Just how you explored the Gen AI, I mean, that's fantastic. You can create stories with your kids.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. I'm so grateful for the space to think about these. You know, I like taking big swings at big ideas with people that can handle it. It's been so much fun hearing how your mind is thinking about this. And I just am very grateful. And is there anything else you want people to know or hear or consider as we wrap this up?
Well, I mean, I'm just generally like want people to be thinking big, but one of the things that we're doing this year and probably in the fall, as well as in a couple of weeks, is we're running another version of our Finding Beauty in Ambiguity program, which is one of my favorite programs that we run. So if people are interested, then check it out on our website, in-dialogue.co. And part of what I'm really passionate about is how do you integrate the thing that's happening around you and then bring it into meaning? And that's effectively how we started this conversation. And I think right now we're in such a ripe moment to be understanding like our context is shifting constantly. What do I want to plug and take from that? What does it mean for my life? And how do I want to move forward with it? Especially when you have kids, I feel like all of that is amplified. And I'm noticing that leaders are really, there was so much interest for this program this time around. And it's the third time we're running it since 2020. And we created it because we wanted a multisensory interdisciplinary experience where we're bringing leaders together to not just learn together, but also to learn from each other. Mm. And then to learn from other people that are coming in and out of the program, like speakers that we're interviewing and different people. So it's almost like a mini summit, but it's also a place where we can explore all the things that we just talked about, where how do you take all of this and bring it forward? Yeah. So I'm excited about that. And then we're doing along the lines of all of this, also research on trust right now, specifically trust within organizations since 2023. What's changed? How are the layoffs shifting things? How is technology shifting things? What does it mean to be in relationship at work right now in this moment? And we're going to be publishing that probably in June of this year. So lots of good stuff's coming out of this work. And this AI talk that we did in South By is going to be developing it into like an hour-long talk for corporations, because I want to instill this kind of philosophical thinking, because it isn't about using it, right? It's about what can it do for you, and how to use it we can figure out later, right? It's more so like, what's the meaning? What's the meaning? And everyone's meaning is different. And allowing space for that is super important.
That's awesome. Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We will link to everything in the show notes. And I'm just super grateful for your time, Rima. Thank you.
Yeah, so good to spend time with you. Thank you.
If you're still with me and you're thinking you might be ready to invest in your development as a communicator, let's talk. Or if you're ready to help your teams become more spellbinding communicators, head over to bronwyncommunications.com and hit the Work With Me button and let's set up some time to talk. Either way, I highly recommend signing up for my newsletter, bronwyncommunications.com/subscribe, so we can stay connected. I send out the show notes for each episode, and at the end of every month, I send out a little roundup of my favorite things I've been reading or listening to or purchasing that are making a difference in my life. It's a good time. As always, thank you for the gift of your time and attention. And shine on, my friend. We need your light.